Litter v. Commonwealth, Robert W. Lofton, Appellant Counsel, Michelle S. Cowley, Deputy Solicitor General, Appellant Counsel.
You may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Robert Lofton from McGuire Woods on behalf of the appellant, Brian Allen Leonard. Leonard is a federal inmate incarcerated in Petersburg. There's no dispute that Leonard complied with the requirements of Code Section 8.01-217. The issue here is whether the trial court abused its discretion in denying Leonard's name change request. In denying the request, which it did 4 days after the Commonwealth filed its opposition and without conducting a hearing, the trial court failed to follow the process.
Was it required to conduct a hearing?
No, sir. A hearing is not required to be conducted. But here, the court called for a response from the Commonwealth, and then 4 days later...
Does 4 days suggest that the court did not give this a thorough and comprehensive consideration?
Yes, Justice Kelsey, I think it does.
Why?
In light of the unrefuted evidence that Leonard provided of his gender dysphoria and the clinician's notes, which covered a 3-year time period in terms of the rationale of why he was asking for the name change, I do think, you know, just quickly denying it does give credence to our argument that the trial court abused its discretion. Because this court has held repeatedly in the context of name change requests that if you find that there is no good cause, you have to state, there has to be some evidentiary reason for it.
But I doubt very seriously we've ever said that if you do 4 days of decision making as opposed to 40, we're going to infer from that there's probably something lacking in your thinking.
Well, I hope there's nothing lacking in my thinking. But the point we're trying to make is that...
The judge's thinking. The implication is 4 days was cursory.
Correct. And here, Leonard provided ample evidence and support for his name change request. That evidence was unrefuted. There was no evidence that the name change was sought to frustrate a legitimate law enforcement purpose or was sought for a fraudulent purpose or would otherwise infringe upon the rights of others. And therefore, the finding of a lack of good cause was not supported by any of the evidence in the record. The joint appendix here is very sparse, as these matters frequently are. Incarcerated individual files something pro se. Commonwealth's attorney will respond. The trial judge adjudicates it. Most of these come up through the Sixth Circuit. Normally there's two judges in the Sixth Circuit, so I gather that they have a process. But just recently in Jordan, the court commended the process that the Judge Sherritt employed there. And that's part of the concern here is in light of the materials that were provided to the court just unilaterally denied the name change request.
Is the right sequence, so we're under 801-217-D.
Yes.
And the incarcerated person, for the threshold question for the court is it has to accept it, which I took to mean is it signed, is it legible, things like that.
Right.
And the next step in the decision-making process is there a good cause?
I thought also as part of whether or not the court accepts the application has determined whether or not there's good cause.
Well, I was going to say... maybe the formatting things, then good cause.
Right. Okay.
As part of the, before we ever even think about a hearing. So if he says, there's just a spiteful reason on the face of it or a frivolous reason or whatever, the court might say, that's not good cause. Well, here what he's saying is gender dysphoria, right? So, and he has this evidence in support of that claim. So isn't the question then, is that or is that not good cause? If it's not good cause, it's game over for the inmate. If it is good cause, then do we need to have a hearing? Is that the decision tree for the trial?
Well, I think the way subsection D is written, it's not as clear as it could be. But I think Justice Goodwin to your point, and this goes back to your initial question, Justice Kelsey, I think the process is, it says, or an incarcerated person, unless the court finds that good cause exists for consideration of such application under the reasons alleged in the application for the requested name change. If the court accepts the application, so I think the way it's phrased, I think step one is receiving the application, and that is an initial determination of whether there's good cause on the face of the application to require the Commonwealth to file an opposition. And then if the Commonwealth files an opposition, that's it. So step one is receiving it and determining there's an initial good cause determination. Step two is requiring the Commonwealth to file an opposition. And then step three, it says, the General Assembly said in subsection D, the court shall conduct a hearing on the application and may order a name change if, after receiving and considering evidence, it goes through the three-step process, would not frustrate a legitimate law enforcement purpose, not fraudulent, would not infringe upon the rights of others. And as this court recently recognized in Jordan, there's still, you know, overarching that, you know, there is the discretion that a trial court has that arguably, if it finds that there's good cause for the name change, as this court wrote, as you wrote in Jordan, and it, the other three concerns are not raised, it still nevertheless can deny the name change request. So here, the trial court, you know, I think it accepted the application. I think it made a preliminary determination on its face, although the record doesn't reflect this at all, that there was good cause because it asked the Commonwealth for a response.
Can I stop you for a second?
Yes, sir.
Because I thought that it did not rule on good cause. I thought the court ruled on good cause and that it was not there.
I'm sorry.
You said that the court accepted the application.
Yes, sir.
See, well,
and that I think is part of the problem with what happened in the proceeding below. Because
can I stop you again?
Yes, sir.
If the court accepted the application, why did you say that the court was not required to have a hearing? Because the statute says after the application is accepted, the court shall conduct a hearing.
Well, I thought Justice Kelsey was asking me as a general matter, under the General Assembly's framework, if a hearing is required. And I think there are name change petitions, just as a general matter, a trial court judge could receive a name change request, determine that there's no good cause, not ask the Commonwealth for a response, and deny it.
See, my thoughts were, you were saying that on this document that the judge signed, he said that there was not good cause, and therefore he short-circuited the process, and you never would have, you did not get to a hearing in this particular instance because he did so.
Correct, Justice Gooden. I think I apologize if I'm not being clear, because I think I'm trying to answer two different questions. With Justice Kelsey, I was saying that there is a possible procedural context where a hearing is not required. Under the facts of this case, Justice Gooden, you are correct. I am arguing that the trial court erred because it accepted Leonard's application. It required the Commonwealth to file a response. And then it failed to conduct a hearing, and it just entered an order 4 days after the Commonwealth filed its opposition saying there's no good cause.
Well, where does that lead you, though? Because if he accepted the application, he shouldn't have done that unless he found good cause for accepting it.
I agree.
Okay, so we have to infer from that he must have found good cause to accept it, because then he asked for a response, he got a response. Why isn't he at stage two, this trial judge, he or she, whomever? Why isn't the trial judge at stage two when the Commonwealth's response comes in and the discretion kicks in?
I don't think that's the way subsection D is written. And I think given that the Commonwealth filed a response, a hearing should have been conducted. And that's what the same judge did in Jordan. He conducted a hearing, and I think I think the guidance that should be given to circuit court judges is...
Well, it's a little confusing what the point is, though, because as we've been talking, I mean, one point is, he blew this off so quickly, 4 days, didn't look at it, cursory, because he didn't find good cause, so he wasn't going to consider anything. That's one way of caricaturing this case. Or two, no, he did consider it. He actually asked for the other side to respond. They did respond. He made a discretionary good cause analysis based on legitimate law enforcement interests. Therefore, he must have found good cause to consider it, because he did consider it. And then he exercised his discretion. And then the only thing you're left with is, well, he should have had a hearing. I don't recall that being the basis of a lower court objection, but what am I missing about the way I'm framing up the issue?
Well, There was no lower court objection because there was no hearing. Mr. Leonard was not represented by counsel. He was proceeding pro se. He submitted his application. The Commonwealth opposed it. There was no opportunity for Mr. Leonard to make any kind of record for this court to review to determine whether there actually is a basis for his name change request. So all that this court has at this point is the information in his application, which I think does show good cause for a name change to be granted. And it's not, you know, the application lays out the reasons why Leonard is requesting this name change, and none of the three concerns raised by the General Assembly in subsection D are addressed. So I do think Mr. Leonard is entitled to a hearing to make his record, and that's the abuse of discretion that occurred.
I'm sorry, Ms. Hoffman, but I'm still confused about the fact that you're saying that the court accepted the application in this particular instance, when in the court's order it says that good cause does not exist for consideration of the application, which indicates to me he did not accept the application.
Justice Goodwin, I agree with you. That's part of the procedural posture of this case is confusing, because I think the way subsection D is written, if a circuit court judge is going to do that, it should do that in the first instance without calling for a response from the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office. And so here, it called for a response from the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office, and then it just quickly denied it without good cause. And that's part of the confusion here, and that's why I do think there was an abuse of discretion here, because the process that was outlined in subsection D that this court discussed in Jordan was not followed here.
Right, but well, in
fact, I think it's a time that Judge Sherritt did not follow the exact procedure that the statute intended, that the statute called for. The question in my mind is, or it seems to me the argument that you have to make is, if the judge seeks the Commonwealth's views, then the judge must hold a hearing thereafter.
Yes, Justice Smith, I agree with you on that. I hope I have been saying that this morning. I think if the Commonwealth files a response, then a hearing is required.
Even if the judge has not indicated that I have accepted it or not accepted it, or I'm holding it in abeyance, I've simply set it aside because in order to determine good cause, I'd rather hear from the Commonwealth than not hear from the Commonwealth. So your view is, having asked for the Commonwealth's views without indicating acceptance, non-acceptance, hold in abeyance, without indicating good faith, not good faith, here's how I'm leaning, the mere request of the Commonwealth's views then requires a hearing.
Yes, sir.
And where, just point to precisely where in the statute is the support for that.
Well, I think that goes back to the question Justice McCullough was asking. I think if you look at subsection D, the first sentence that outlines no application shall be accepted, and then unless the court finds a good cause exists for consideration, the next sentence, if the court accepts the application, the court shall mail or deliver the application to the attorney for the
yes.
Commonwealth.
Here's my question, though.
Yes, Justice.
If the court has not yet accepted it, is the court prohibited from seeking the Commonwealth's opinion?
The statute is not clear there. And I think the way that it is phrased, I think the logical inference is if a circuit court judge receives it and calls for the views of the Commonwealth's attorney, then he has to have a hearing.
I think the Commonwealth will disagree, but I do understand now how you're approaching it.
So the analogy would be, you're really saying that this first level is just a demur. The trial court can't look at anything other than the application in the mail, and can't look at the grounds of defense, can't look at anything. And that would be a very fair analogy if we were in circuit court involving a civil action, but this statute doesn't seem to import any of that. I mean, finding good cause is different from saying, I find that these facts, if alleged, would constitute good cause, irrespective of the 15 different ways the opponent may come in and say it's not true. Do you see the struggle?
Yes, Justice Kelsey, I see the struggle. And you know, I recognize that. I recognize the difficulty in the way the statute is written. And it's a difficulty both for inmates and for circuit court judges. And so I think with this case, as the court did in Jordan, I hope the court will provide guidance so that inmates know exactly how they have to file and the process and the procedure they can expect.
You're running out of time, of course, but we still haven't touched on the fact that 217D treats this particular kind of inmate very differently from all the other inmates. I mean,
yes, Justice Kelsey, and if I'm allowed rebuttal, I can address that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, you may do it now, since the question is right before you, if you'd like.
So I think, is your question in terms of the fact that he's a federal inmate who was sentenced in Missouri?
No, that under the sexual offender portion, no application shall be accepted unless the court finds. The syntax of the sentence has changed in this context.
Yes, and I think that goes back to Justice Goodwin's questions. You know, the way the statute is written is there's some parsing that has to occur. And I think the court can either say a circuit court judge is required to make an initial determination to ascertain whether there is good cause sufficient to require the Commonwealth to file a response. And if a response is called for, then a hearing has to occur. I think that's the way the statute, I think that's the most logical reading of the statute. Conversely, the court could say, the way it's written, we're going to parse it in such a way that if the circuit court may call for a response from the Commonwealth's attorney, and then it may make an initial determination of whether there is good cause once it has both pleadings in front of it. And if it finds that there's no good cause, then that's the end of the inquiry.
It could say
that there is good cause, and we'll have to conduct a hearing. But I do think if the court does that, I think it needs to reconcile that, what I just said, with what it has said in Dennis and in Brown and in Stevens, that a finding of a lack of good cause must be supported by evidence in the record. The court has repeated that statement in all three of those cases. And so I think if that is the way the court resolves this and gives that kind of continuing with Jordan, gives circuit courts that discretion, I think it ought to reconcile that statement from those three cases to say, if you find that there's no good cause, you still have to have evidence in the record. And the one last thing I would say, recognizing I have no rebuttal, if the court denies, if the court affirms the judgment below, I would ask, given that Mr. Leonard is going to go back into the custody of Missouri in 2020, that the court would somehow reflect that this is without prejudice for his ability to seek a name change in Missouri when he goes back into the custody of the Missouri state penitentiary system, just so there's no fight 2 years from now over whether this court's holding is res judicata.
Wouldn't that be their decision and not ours?
Arguably, yes, sir, Chief Justice Lemons. But I would like to assist my client, who would like to get his name changed. And so, if this court affirms the judgment below, I just would like to set him up so that if he makes a similar request when he goes to Missouri, that at least that one portion of an argument against him is hopefully resolved.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Michelle Callan for the Commonwealth. We agree with our friend on the other side that if this court were to affirm, we would not be opposed with a representation that Ms. Leonard could seek a name change when she arrives in Missouri less than 2 years from now. And that's a key point in this case. This case does not involve a situation in which the record reflects merely that the individual seeking a name change is just transgender. It also reflects the fact that this particular applicant is going to be transferred to a facility in a different state in less than 2 years. And legitimate law enforcement concerns regarding that transfer, a name change soon before a transfer, exist on this record. And that's a key point here, Your Honors. The record also reflects that all of the...
And by record, you mean what the Commonwealth submitted?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, but I mean, ordinarily, you know, we the way evidence is presented is by, not just by a sort of, you know, that kind of submission. I mean, you have witnesses or you have stipulations or whatever. What makes this different? In other words, you may be absolutely right, but does there need to be some kind of evidentiary presentation other than just an assertion and a pleading?
Not in this context, Your Honor. And it's important to look at the syntax of the particular statute at issue here. The statute at issue here, which was recently amended to provide additional discretion to circuit court judges, only states what a circuit court must do if it's inclined to accept the application. It does not state what the circuit court must do in order to reject the application. So that evidentiary requirement only sets in were the court inclined to accept the application. And the findings that the name change would not frustrate a legitimate law enforcement goal, that the name change is not fraudulent, and that the name change would not otherwise infringe on the rights of others, those are necessary findings in order to have a name change application, and in that a successful name change application, and written findings are required in that circumstance. Those the hearing and the written findings are not necessary if the court were inclined to deny the name change application.
No, what you're saying is that the court could deny it upon receipt of the application and not send it anywhere, correct?
Is this in terms of the first phase or the second phase, Your Honor?
Stage one.
Yes, Your Honor.
The application, look at it, no, that's not going to work. Deny.
Yes, Your Honor.
If it is, quote, accepted, either expressly or by implication by sending it on to the Commonwealth Attorney, what is the significance of that? Is that a determination that good cause exists?
Yes, Your Honor. And so in the second stage, in the second phase, once a circuit court judge has determined that good cause existed on the face of the application.
Well, but I guess, I mean, you're skipping something here because I want to get just before that. Upon acceptance of the application, is that a determination that good cause existed?
Reflecting the representations by my friend on the other side, yes, I think we're in agreement on that.
All right. And so then it goes to the Commonwealth's attorney. The Commonwealth's attorney then responds, and the court has, in your view, the ability to then revisit that question and say, well, now I've heard from the Commonwealth, and there is no good cause.
So I think that the idea is that at that point, the circuit court has broad discretion to deny the application. And in this case, the effect of what happened is that the circuit court denied the application.
So you think they can deny it without a hearing once they've sent it to the Commonwealth for a response?
Yes, Your Honor.
It says there shall be a hearing. Does that shall mean may?
So in this context, I think it's important to look at the syntax of that whole provision. It says if the court accepts the application, it shall mail the copy to the Commonwealth, and it says the court shall conduct a hearing on the application and may order a name change if, after receiving and considering evidence concerning the circumstances regarding the requested name change, it makes these three jurisdictional findings.
But it can't accept evidence without a hearing.
So it accepts the evidence of the Commonwealth or the Commonwealth submission.
That's not evidence.
It says it shall conduct a hearing. Where was the hearing?
So in this case, there was no hearing, Your Honor. And from our view, the case, a circuit court judge can reject the application without a hearing. It is only if it's inclined to accept the application, it must move on to that stage.
Wouldn't it say a proffer of evidence or something along those lines? I mean, I see what you're getting at, but it doesn't say that. It says evidence, which I would think would mean affidavits or... I mean, some form or you know, certified court orders, whatever, something, as opposed to just assertions in a pleading.
So I think all of that part of the sentence that you're looking at, Your Honor, that all applies if the court is inclined to grant the application. But if the court is, if the circuit court is inclined to deny the application, that's all not necessary.
What, grant versus acceptance. Perhaps I misunderstood your answer to the chief's question. The chief said by sending it on, it either directly or impliedly accepted the application.
Yes, Your Honor. Apologies if I mixed up those two words. So
once it has accepted the application, would that not indicate that there was good cause?
Yes, Your Honor. And this is the idea of the hearing is after the good cause.
Well, but it, the statute says that upon acceptance, it's good cause for consideration of the application. It's not a merits determination that there's good cause.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which I suspect is why you say that when the Commonwealth then responds through the Commonwealth's attorney, that you do not have to have a hearing because you've now brought the same issue back again. Now I know enough to determine that there is no good cause to proceed any further with this case. Now, if that's what you're saying, I think it is. If you are, it makes perfect sense. It's the statute that stands in the way.
So I think that the idea is it's not the idea of revisiting the initial good cause determination.
If you have good cause for consideration. Okay, now I've heard from the Commonwealth, and now I have enough evidence to consider it. I don't have to have a hearing under those circumstances. I'm considering it on the papers, and I find this has to be dismissed. There's no basis for this. And that makes perfect sense to me. But again, the only thing that appears to stand in the way of it is the statute. And it says the court shall conduct a hearing.
So I think looking at that provision in the context of the entire statute, that was specifically amended to grant additional discretion to circuit court judges, and also the fact that the showing that the name change would not frustrate a legitimate law enforcement purpose, and the other requirements that those are jurisdictional, in light of this particular case and the Commonwealth's filing here and the impending transfer and to Missouri and the law enforcement purposes that will be impeded by that transfer, it's reasonable for a circuit court judge looking at that to conclude that this is a case where the application...
I interrupt you again, I'm sorry, but going back to Justice Goodwin's first question, tell me if I'm right or wrong on these things. There's one order entered in this case, right? One written order?
Yes, Your Honor.
And if I'm reading the right order, it flat out says good cause does not exist for consideration of the application. Therefore, the application for change name is denied. The court's holding that it's not going to consider it, it's not going to be accepted, it's not going to hold a hearing, it's not going to do anything. Everything stops at the first level of good cause. And then tie that to Justice Mims' question, it appears quite obviously that the trial court looked at the response of the respondent in order to make that decision, and then that, keep following the sequence, then that goes to the last question which I asked, which is, okay, and Justice Mims implied, what's wrong with that? Where does it say you can't do that? Where does it say you can only do a demur analysis? Do you follow the three steps?
Yes, Your Honor. So I think there are two ways to look at what happened here. On the first hand, we can look and conclude that we're in phase one, the good cause phase, and kind of in.
Well, that would be helpful because that's exactly what the order says.
And I think, to the extent,
Counsel, you've already indicated that we're beyond that. Because that's the challenge right now. So tell me if I heard you wrong, that the court accepted the application. And therefore, by virtue of the fact that it was sent to the Commonwealth, the court had found good cause and now wanted the Commonwealth's response. It's a terribly worded statute, but I've got to pay attention both to the statute and the Commonwealth and your office's positions. Walk me through.
Understood, Your Honor, and I think it's additionally anomalous in the fact that we have this filing by the Commonwealth, but also this form that was filled out by the circuit court that says there's no good cause.
Well, let's call it an order. It is an order of the court which is on appeal to us. How about that?
So the court's order and the court's denial of the name change is says that there's no good cause. So I think that there are two ways. There are two ways of looking at this. One could look at it as being in phase one, and one could look at it as being in phase two. But either way, it's our view that the denial was improper, looking at it from either perspective. And to the extent this court concludes that there's some sort of impropriety in denying, saying that there's no good cause, as opposed to a denial saying that the application or that legitimate law enforcement purposes would be harmed by this granting the name change at this time. To the extent there was some sort of procedural error in getting to that result, we would submit that affirmance is appropriate under the right result, wrong reason doctrine.
Wouldn't you anticipate that the reason the General Assembly said that the court shall hold a hearing is so that the petitioner may respond to whatever comments the Commonwealth made?
So our reading of shall in the circumstances is consistent with this court's reasoning in Rinkman, where under the Virginia law, the term shall in a statute is generally construed as directory, as opposed to mandatory. And I think here it would be mandatory, the hearing would be mandatory, if the court were inclined to grant the application. But here, Ms. Leonard does not contest that she is set to be transferred to Missouri in less than 2 years. In fact, in her reply brief before this court, she attached a number of exhibits reflecting that she's due to be transferred and not all the crimes at issue took place in Missouri. So given that is undisputed, it's not unreasonable and it's not an abuse of discretion for a circuit court judge to view that and to conclude that legitimate law enforcement purposes would be harmed by granting the name change application at this time, so soon before the transfer. Ms. Leonard is free to file her application for a name change once she's transferred to Missouri in less than 2 years. And that would make sense because the crimes were all committed in Missouri. The victims were located in Missouri. And so Missouri is better situated.
Can I stop you for a second? Because all of that makes sense, and the circuit court certainly could rule in that way, but it didn't. The court said they're rejecting the application because there was not any good cause. So, what you're saying makes perfectly good sense, and the court certainly has the authority to do it, but it didn't do that.
But since the court found lack of good cause, we searched the record for what that lack of good cause might be, and that's a perfectly plausible and legitimate explanation. So I think part of it.
Let me stop you for a second. Seems like to me we run head on into our case N. Ray Dennis when we talk about what the court is to consider for purposes of making its good cause determination. And in that, we said in making the good cause determination, the only thing the court can look at is the application of the person seeking the name change. So that's the reason why the court can't consider those things for purposes of determining good cause.
So we would submit that the statute as it's written does not restrict the Commonwealth from looking at what it has available, does not restrict the circuit court from considering the record that's before it. But I think it's important to also distinguish In re Dennis, because In re Dennis was one in which the record only reflected a denial of the name change merely because the applicant had engaged in sexual offenses. In this case, there's more in the record than just the sexual offenses and the nature of Ms. Leonard's offenses. There's also the fact of the impending transfer. And it's the impending transfer that makes a large difference here. The fact that Ms. Leonard, that there's legitimate law enforcement concerns that arise from changing a name change soon before so soon before a transfer, and that Ms. Leonard is free to apply to change her name once she's transferred to Missouri, and those concerns dissipate. And if she does that, then it's the state where all the crimes occurred, it's the state where the victims are located that will be considering her name change applications. Unless the court has any other questions, we ask that you affirm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Laughlin, we thank you and your firm for accepting this appointment on a pro bono basis. Call the next case.